Attention entrepreneurs and business owners. It's time to stop working so hard, start working smart, and build a business that stands on its own.
Generate real wealth, real freedom,
and a real legacy.
Now from New York City, small business champion and business attorney, helping thousands of entrepreneurs generate hundreds of millions of dollars. Here's Nina Kaufman, and this is the Cash Out Big Podcast.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to Cash Out Big, where we're sharing the tools to get your business functioning like a well-oiled machine. And that way, your company can generate real wealth, real freedom for you, and a real legacy. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. Today on the show, I'm going to talk with Sean Driscoll, who's a business strategist, about, you know, what happens when the model, the way you're serving customers and the money you're seeing just isn't working, and it's not taking you where you want to go. And what do you want to do about it? What can you do about it? So stay tuned for that. As I mentioned on a recent episode, I'm reading a book called The Network Imperative, How to Grow and Survive in an Age of Digital Business Models. And in addition to the information around subscriptions, what I also find fascinating was the multipliers that Barry Liebert, the author, attributed to different kinds of businesses. So if you're an asset builder business like Ford or Walmart, where you've got things and stuff and selling products, you have a multiplier of 2. If you're a service provider like us, you've got a multiplier of 3. If you're a technology creator, you're like Microsoft and other software companies, you have a multiplier of 5. But where his thesis comes in is when you become a network orchestrator, Uber, eBay, Airbnb, he's giving them a multiplier of 8. So as you think about how do we get more leverage in our business, it becomes even more valuable. So as you can see with those multipliers, that leverage is so all important. It's important not just from the exit strategy point of view, but it's also important from a day-to-day point of view, because the more you're building your business in that way, the less you have to be on the hamster wheel with everything on your shoulders. So how good is that? And that's something that we also touch on in our brand new webinar, Cash Out Big. Gee, I think I like the title. So our brand new webinar, which looks at how can you get your business plane, as it were, off the tarmac and into cruising altitude. And that's part of what we talk about in our Cash Out Big webinar. So sign up for free access at cashoutbigwebinar.com. And now for our guest. So I'm really happy to have, as I mentioned, Sean Driscoll, because she understands the struggle that many service business owners have, particularly when the business really relies on their expertise. And she's not just coaching them to deal with the struggle and put up with it, but also to make sure that the business is tailored to where they add the most value. I mean, if we're going to be in it, why be miserable, folks, right? Exactly. So we're happy to have her here on Business Breakthrough. Have a listen. Sean, thanks so much for joining us today. I wanted to talk to you because you have a very unusual approach to business. You know, as you probably know, there are many small business owners, especially in the service and expert industries, that struggle. And very often we tend to think, well, I don't have enough clients, I don't have enough staff. But you've kind of pinpointed something that's really interesting. They might be trying to build a business that's not right for them. Can you speak to that a little more?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of different directions that are available in the marketplace for a service-based business owner. Sometimes, though, it seems like you should do what is common in your space. So if you're an accountant, you know, build it like other accountants have built it. If you're a coach, build it like other coaches have built it. You know, there's just sort of those standard accepted ways of practicing service-based business. And so a lot of times people end up kind of marching down a pathway that ultimately isn't working for them, and they can't figure out why. They see it working for other people who are similar to them, but they can't figure out why it's not working for their business and for their life and for who they are. And it can create a lot of frustration.
So what are the things So talk to us about how do you first identify, maybe it's the overall business model that might be the issue.
Right. So I think there's a couple things that I look, that I listen for and that I see in people when they're in the wrong model and they might not realize it. One is if they find that, you know, they'll put a plan in place or they'll get an idea. This is what I'm going to do. You know, I'm going to create this product or I'm going to, you know, create this community or whatever, right? They get some idea that they're going to implement for their service-based business to help scale and grow the business. And then they find every step of the way they're procrastinating, they're hesitating, they're sort of spinning their wheels about it. So that can be one red flag that, like, you might be off track, that you might be trying to do something that's not in alignment with how you're wired to be in business. It could be that you put something out there and your customers don't respond. You know, you work really hard, you develop it, you do everything right in terms of the marketing and the messaging and all of that, and it flops. It's like a, you know, nothing. And I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do, and boom, nothing, right? I mean, that happened to me in the early years. I remember launching something, and I think I was told by a coach, you got to have a product, you know. So, oh, I spent forever doing this product and doing all the marketing and blah, blah, blah. And I sold 5.
Ouch.
And I was like, okay, that was a really expensive lesson for me. And I was miserable during the making of the product, which didn't help the situation, right? Because I hated every step of the journey. So that's another signal, is that, you know, you look at your calendar and you dread what's on it. You look at your to-do list and you think, oh my gosh, I'm so drained. I'm discouraged. Like, you know, any of those kinds of things, especially for a service-based business owner, are really critical clues that you might be working against your dominant type, against the way that's going to work best for you and for those that you serve.
Now, but isn't there a danger to focus on what feels good and not on ultimately what can really become a business that has legs, that's not just going to be a job for me going forward? I mean, I hear a lot about the, do your passion, do what you love.
This is not exclusively about feel good, you know, development, right? But it is about if you're in a service-based business, one of the greatest assets you have is your own enthusiasm and energy for what you do. And you want to harness that, and you want to understand what your biggest asset is when it comes to the value you're bringing to the marketplace. And oftentimes people get caught up in trying to do something because they think they should, when there's another strategy that's equally viable that would allow their business to thrive, that would give them a little more juice as the business owner. Instead of draining them, it would actually give them a little juice and some energy and some enthusiasm. And that's equally viable and smart strategically. And so that's really what I'm talking about. So it's not just, you know, wake up every day and do what feels right. It's about a strategy and really understanding, okay, this is what my business is about. This is how I deliver exceptional customer value. This is what customers who do business with our business, with my business, want to experience. And this is work that when I do it, I know I'm sort of in my zone of genius. I know we're doing our best work here. And there's also an area for most business owners that's not that. That's the opposite of that. That's like the dead zone, the derailer. And even though it might be smart business for somebody else, and somebody else might just be perfectly wired to do that, it's a drain for you, and it's a derailer for your business, and it's going to be the least lucrative thing you can do. So like the product for me, one of the least lucrative things I could have spent my time and energy and effort on, because it wasn't going to allow me to deliver the value that I'm known for and that distinguishes me in the marketplace.
Right. So can you give perhaps another example of a client, just so we can see what that looks like, making that shift from a strategy that may not be working, that's kind of draining a business owner, to something that gets them invigorated and also gets their profits flowing?
Yeah. So let's see. This one's going to seem a little unusual, but I think it's a great illustration, as I have worked with a client for a few years who came to me at first, and she had a dog training business, right? So her service was a specific way that she had developed to train dogs, in particular competition and herding and sport dogs, you know, so people who compete on the circuit and are really into, like, you know, working with their dogs, right? It works for the everyday pet, but it's specific to, you know, people who are sporting with their dogs of some type. And she had a farm, lived in the Midwest, and had people coming to her farm to work with her, right? Super limiting business model. She didn't love it. She was wanting to have a much bigger impact in the way in which people worked with these kinds of dogs and partnered with their dogs. And when I assessed what was going on with her, you know, she was working in this really intimate, hands-on way, and she was also limited seasonally because a lot of the work is outdoors, and when you live in the Midwest and or like in New York, you know, you're limited by the seasons, right? Like, you can't be outside in the middle of January, you know. Well, you could, but I don't think it would work as well with the dog. So, you know, she had this really confined business model. And when we really looked at what she wanted, she was somebody with an innovative approach who wanted to be of big impact. And so we looked at how can you develop this as an online training where you can teach some of these foundational principles. You know, you can create courses for these people. You can create community for these people who are into sporting and herding and things like that with their dogs. And so she decided that that was the direction she wanted to go because she was more wired to do that. That was what she was really into and was finding the hands-on work on the farm really draining and limiting. And so in a matter of probably just over a year, maybe a year and a half, she developed a series of courses. She launched them online. She marketed them through Facebook ads and began a community, an online membership. And so now her business is totally scalable, and 90% of everything she does is virtual online supporting this community, and only about 10% are the people who want to come and work privately with her. And, of course, now that's at a premium because she's built up her membership reputation, and people see that she's somebody with unique expertise and a difference. You know, she trains her dogs differently. She doesn't use, you know, rewards and punishments. Like, she has a different approach. She's more holistic. And so she has managed to completely flip her business model to this membership training-based model and also not be limited by geography or weather.
Oh, terrific. So you have identified a handful of different kinds of business models. Can you just take us through what are the top, say, four that you've seen that tend to work with or have, can provide service business owners with options?
Yeah. So what I've identified over the years is that there's four dominant ways to be in business, I guess, for lack of a better way of saying it. Like, there's four dominant strategies, right? In service-based businesses, expertise-based businesses. One is more of an intimacy-based business. So like I was describing with the woman and the dogs, right? Like, having that really hands-on connected relationship. Now, it doesn't always have to be limited to one-to-one, but, you know, it might be small groups, you know, things like that. So there's intimacy is one strategy and one customer experience that you can offer, right? That people will pay for. They want that connection. They want to be seen and heard, and they want it customized a little bit to them and personalized, right? So intimacy is one type, and there's ways to scale intimacy, and we can talk about that. There's also, but I'm going to go over the four types first. There's inspiration. There's the second category that I identified is inspiration. These are businesses that, you know, the predominant value that people come to them for is to be empowered, to have a vision for how it can be, and maybe to have a path laid out for them of like, here's how you can become this thing, or here's how you can achieve this. These tend to be larger communities and, you know, having a much bigger vision, and everybody kind of follows a similar pathway, right? As opposed to with the intimates where you can be a little more hands-on and tailored, right? It's like,
is that like a Tony Robbins type business? Or
Tony Robbins, totally perfect example of a high inspiration business, right? Like, you know, he's got this new movie out right now, right? And tons of people coming into this environment. Everybody's getting the same experience, pretty much, right? And going through the same material, and it's high energy and, right, all about where you can go and vision and, right, really inspiring people and creating transformation and serving them in that way. The third type is information. So in online world, you hear a lot about content and information, but this is the type of business that really delivers value through their expertise, through their content, through systems or process, and really serves a market that craves to, you know, understanding or knowledge or craves, you know, to some degree to be competent in something, right?
Okay. Who have you seen that does that really well?
Let's see. I would put somebody like a Seth Godin here.
Okay.
A lot of typical authors would go in the information quadrant, maybe even a Jack Canfield, although he pairs that with some inspiration, right?
So okay.
Most businesses might pair, you know, a couple types together to create a robust model. And then the fourth one is innovation. This is a business that really delivers value through, you know, new ideas, challenging the status quo, doing something original or unique or just off the beaten path. And this is creating a customer experience for those people who really want and, you know, something cutting edge, something different. They like the insider status, right? So obviously, you know, this isn't necessarily a service-based business, but Apple would fall here. You know, I mentioned Seth Godin. I think a lot of his stuff is innovative. Or let's see who else would be more in the service space that would fall here. Even like the companies that do, like the StrengthsFinder company,
oh,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're innovating, right? They're innovating through their assessment and giving you some innovative ways to look at yourself, right? So that would be an example.
Okay. And typical, just to jump back, typical intimacy businesses, I would think might be, you mentioned accountants and accounting firms and professional services, where it tends to be that one-on-one kind of service.
Right. So you have that. I mean, you know, attorneys to some degree fall into the intimacy-based business, right? You can certainly scale that, but you know, a classic example to me of like a business that successfully has scaled intimacy, and then as they scaled, also moved into a couple other complementary areas, would be like a Weight Watchers, right? So Weight Watchers started actually here near where I live in Michigan, by a woman in her living room, right? They'll come in, they held each other accountable, they sat in their living room, very intimate setting to help people with weight loss. As she scaled that, like through franchising and, you know, through creating all these local, the Weight Watchers program retains that local meeting, intimate, safe, trusted environment. They just have scaled that, you know, by taking it to other locations. So an intimacy can scale as long as you retain the customer experience of trust and connection and safety and customization.
Terrific. And you were going to also, now that we've outlined sort of the four different kinds of dominant strategies, how do businesses identify, or I should say really business owners, how do they identify maybe where they are and what's really right for them?
Well, there's a couple ways, right? One is some people, just when they hear the types, they start to resonate and they'll say, oh, that's me. Sometimes people feel like, no, I'm everything or I'm all of it or whatever. And so then we want to look at, okay, how do we really discern what's the main driver in your business? And one of the things you can look at, sometimes I'll have a client, and this is something anybody can do, is, you know, identify where have you historically made the most money in your business? Now, this isn't a definitive answer, but it will show you a pattern of where people come to you and what they value in you. So if you've, you know, historically made the most money off of, you know, one-to-one service, and then when you've tried to do like a product, it didn't really work, that's something to look at, right, and say, am I missing the deepest value that I provide? So, you know, I'll have people sort of map where's the value exchange that's already been demonstrated historically in your business? What do people naturally come to you? If you did nothing to market yourself, if you did nothing to define yourself, what would people already think of you for? That will give you a clue. It's not the definitive answer, but it will certainly give you a clue as to where already you have distinguished yourself as a value provider. And this is a lot about, it's about you, but it's really a lot about building your business around the best way you can maximize the value you bring to your. I would say the other thing to look at is customers and work like customer experiences, so service experiences that have been the best. So if you look at, okay, what were your top five customer experiences for your company, whether you personally delivered them or your team delivered them, it really doesn't matter. But like, who really represents the best of our customers? And the people who got the best result, who were amazing for our company to work with, you know, we had longevity, you know, it was just a really good overall experience for both the business and the customer. If you look at that, that can also give you a clue, as can looking at some of the worst customer experiences you've had. Right? So I like to find the edges first, like the extremes. You know, what was the best thing? What was the worst thing? What was the best place you made money? What's the worst thing you ever did to make money? To start to find the edges, right? Like get some contrast. And the worst customer experiences will also be a clue, because typically what I have found is that the worst customer experiences are because you brought in a customer who valued an experience that was in your derailer type, that was not what you're best at delivering. So if you brought in a customer who really wanted, you know, like a proven methodical way, but you're a high innovator, you're going to conflict with that customer, and that's going to be a non-pleasant experience for either of you.
Hmm. Terrific. So how do you balance, let's say, oh, gee, because I don't have any experience with this, being in a expertise area, shall we say, that where there's a common business model, that this is the way it's always been done, and this is what you do when you want to start a business that's in that particular field, like law.
Right.
And there are certain ways, let's say an intimacy model, that people resonate with you and you're delivering good service. But how do you balance whether that really is the right business model for the owner versus it's what people gravitate toward because it's what they know? Does that make sense?
Right. Because it's how it's done, right? Like, and when you first get started, most of us want to do the path that's laid before, right? And
right.
Something that's proven, especially when you're new, starting your practice. But there does come a point where there's a cost to doing that business that's maybe too high for some owners because it's really out of touch with who they are. So I have a story about this, but not exactly the same, but I'll answer this through the story, I think. Like,
right.
I had a woman several years ago that I started working with who had developed, she was in the healthcare field and had developed a pretty solid reputation as a healthcare consultant, helping hospitals, you know, in very specific ways. And she had written a couple books and, you know, gotten herself known. However, when she came to me, she was super burned out. She traveled all the time. She didn't like the intimacy of, like, having to be in these hospitals and, you know, be working one-on-one with everybody. And she was debating whether she should sort of just chuck the consulting thing and focus on writing and keynoting and, you know, just kind of doing the speaker circuit and write. But when we assessed it, one of the things that was super important to her, she was a high innovator. She had a methodology she developed that really helped change things within these hospitals that affected how patients were cared for, like on a day-to-day basis. And she was super passionate about that happening. And so when we looked at it, it was like, can you really achieve your mission, right, of affecting change in hospitals if you're keynoting and writing books? And she said, no, but I'm also dying. I'm like also dying because I'm working all the time. I'm traveling 80% of the year and this isn't right for me, right? So she was in this typical consulting model, but it was not right for her. So then we looked at the transition of, okay, how can you scale this? And you can, you know, carry the message, be the messenger, be the thought leader, right? And it really became about, she decided her choice was to build her own internal team. So hire somebody to be the lead consultant, build up a consulting team over time. And she would go out and, you know, do some keynoting, speaking to be seen by CEOs of hospitals. And really within about 18 months of that decision, she found the right person. She got off the road of doing the work and, you know, trained people in her method. They became her. She built up these assets, right? She had her own methodology. Now she had a trained team. She could deploy them and she could stay home and be the CEO. And for her, that model was the smartest model, so she didn't have to be the consultant anymore. And then she also began developing some other product lines that, you know, would support these hospitals. And she was able to take her business, you know, from like the mid six figures into multi-millions and get offers to purchase that business within a couple of years.
That's a beautiful thing. That is a great story.
Like, it's an amazing story. I love that story very much because it served her. right? And she was stuck before, like, thinking it was one or the other, right? I either have to do it this way where I go in because people want me, or I have to step out of that completely and forget it and, you know, do what's going to serve me personally better. She didn't really see a different road until we looked at, okay, what's going to accomplish the mission, what's going to support your lifestyle, and what's really going to allow you to have the impact that you want to have.
Great. You know, and you have a quote on your site that the marketplace responds when you're in alignment. And it's not, as you say, it's not just the money, but also in this particular situation, that client was, she said she was dying. She's on the road all the time. She's exhausted.
It's really hard to walk into a, you know, a suite of CEOs or C-suite, you know, to try to pitch your product when you're just feeling like you're at knocking, you know, you need a nap, right? And that even worse, that there's a part of you, a big part of you that almost hopes they don't buy your consulting project because you don't want to have to fulfill it. Yeah. And I think that's what happens to a lot of people when they're in a business model that's not right for them. A big part of them is like internally praying that this customer doesn't buy.
I'm sorry, I'm sitting, and I shouldn't sit here on dead air, but that is really, really powerful to acknowledge that, because I know that clients have said that to me as they've been expressing some of their exhaustion issues, that you know, they just wish weren't such a flow, but they don't then have the system to handle it without it having to fall onto their plates.
Exactly. And so that is not good for business growth. That's not good for scale, right? Because that energy is going to come through. It's going to, you know, you're not going to go into that sales conversation or that opportunity and really shine. There's such a high cost, you know, to you. So that's why I said, like, at the beginning, it's not just about feel good, right? Like, this isn't just to come good to me. This is a conversation about, you know, what's really going to be sustainable long term.
Right. Terrific. So last words of wisdom, as we're thinking about business owners, again, who want to scale, who want the revenue, but also want to be in alignment with themselves so that they also have a life. Any other points that you would give us?
You know, I guess I would just say that you have to believe that it's possible, right, to do that. And sometimes even that is a fundamental conflict, because a lot of times that's the first place I have to start with somebody, is undoing some of the thinking that's keeping them from seeing the possibility, right? It is possible that there is a business model that's right for you, that's scalable, that your customers will highly value, and that will support your life. And you don't have to sacrifice, and, you know, it's not always about sacrifice and shoulds and force fitting. It's really about fine tuning the business, right? There's already some really good things happening in any business. There's already evidence of where the maximum scalable value is. You just have to be willing to take that second look at it.
Great. Terrific. And that's a great place to end. So Sean, thank you for so much for being with us today and showing us that, yeah, you can actually grow your business your way and have it scalable and have it produce the income that you need and deserve, and some great examples about what happens when all of the pieces really do fit together. So thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for tuning in to Cash Out Big. Does your business need a lift? Find out why you may be stuck on the tarmac and what to do about it by accessing one of our special video trainings, the Cash Out Big webinar. We share our action-packed scale formula so you can create the wealth, the freedom, and the legacy you want from your business. Sign up at cashoutbigwebinar.com. Sign up now, and we'll see you on the next podcast.